Anyone can tell you the news.
We lock Diamond and Silk.
Mark Zuckerberg will end up, and it's going to be a face without the book.
Without the face.
Hey, Megan, how are you?
Now they're chipping away at the normalization of pedophilia, and the left is embracing this type of behavior.
We welcome Dinesh D'Souza.
I know I ticked him off. In a certain sense, it's a giant up yours to Obama, and that's why the left is freaking out over it.
Jack Kennedy and LBJ, Clinton, and the double standard from the left.
Yeah, I love how the left does nothing but push the most bizarre practices down our throats and up our tailpipes.
It takes a real man to tackle the hot issues that really matter.
Michael Hart is the man of this house.
Welcome to the Michael Hart Show.
September 2019, the Michael Hart Show, right here in the heart of America, broadcasting and network. This program brought to you by the Unknown America Project. For more information, go to theunknownamerica.com, theunknownamerica.com. The children's version of the book will be released and up on the website almost any day now. So make certain that you check that out over the course of the next few days, theunknownamerica.com. Also, our friends over at the Land Report, landreport.com. If you love land, this is the magazine for you. And of course, our good friends over at libertyonetech.com for all of your cyber needs. For more information on their tech support websites, you name it, check out Liberty, then the number one, tech.com, libertyonetech.com. This is the Trump to House Dems Probe This edition. House Democrats are accelerating and expanding their Trump-focused investigations as they return from summer recess as President Trump rejects the latest round of ethics complaints and his allies warn that the growing number of probes could derail the Democrats' legislative agenda. In the latest major development, House Judiciary Committee Chairman Jerry Nadler announced a vote, another vote, for later this week that will essentially formalize the early stages of impeachment proceedings. No, this is not a repeat program. It is a repeat strategy. Following weeks of confusion, a committee vote is scheduled for this Thursday to set the rules for future hearings in its investigation to determine whether or not there are impeachable offenses against the president. We'll get into that a little bit later on. Also today, taking a look at the Amazon employees, more than 900 of them plan to strike over climate change. We've got the rejection of Trump license plates. The CIA has slammed CNN's misguided and false reporting on the, alleged spies' extradition from the Kremlin. And also George Soros, of all people, calls Trump's China stance his greatest foreign policy achievement. These stories, your calls at 929-477-3761. Also, this day in history, also want to invite you to check out the YouTube channel. Simply enough, just go to YouTube and in the search bar, put Hart, H-A-R-T, Heart of America, and the Unknown America Project will pop up. Last couple of weeks, we've been working on cobbling together our response to the 1619 Project. That video will be up today. We tried to make it as tight as we possibly could in terms of, the timing of it. I know a lot of people get kind of bored when a video goes 30, 40 minutes, despite the fact they can be quite instructive. We're going to be taking a look at what's going on in the country in terms of race relations and education, et cetera. So go check out the YouTube channel. No salesman's going to call. Subscribe to the channel. The more subscribers we get, the more goodies we unlock and the more things that we can bring to you via the YouTube platform. So please go over and check that out at your earliest convenience. This is the eve of the 9/11 attacks, obviously, and had not quite decided whether or not we're going to be live with you tomorrow. So many things are going on. We've gotten a lot of opportunities to write and to speak and other things that we're working on and the continuing construction of the YouTube channel, but I did not want to allow this particular day or this observation to go by because we have not forgotten here on the Michael Hart Show and so many of the things that need to be discussed on pretty much an ongoing and daily basis. But with that said, we are getting a lot of opportunities to do a few other things that have more or less impeded our ability to do this broadcast every single day of the week. So we'll be announcing later today on our social media platforms, that being Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, and, you know, we don't do much on Instagram. I'm kind of reserving that for my kids and their friends. But keep an eye on the Heart of America Facebook page, and we'll be making an announcement later today or first thing in the morning about whether or not we're going to be coming to you live on the Wednesday broadcast. But first, without any further ado, it was on this date in 1776 that Nathan Hale volunteers to spy for the Continental Army. A day or so ago, I had an opportunity to respond to a media query as to why we have a Constitution. It was obviously somewhat of a, I'm thinking, you know, more of a millennial-focused type of publication. And I did respond to them yesterday afternoon, and don't know that my thoughts, my insights on the Constitution and the early days of this country is going to make it to print. But it does speak just volumes to what took place, you know, in the years of around 1774 all the way up to 1787 and beyond, even all the way up to the year 1812. And so many people in this country that just do not understand the sacrifices that were made, Nathan Hale being one example, and the realities that many people in the new nation, or what would become the new nation, did not have the, well, they were loyal in many, many cases to the crown. And it was a very contemptuous time, a time when there was a lot of suspicion amongst, well, peers, family members, church members, et cetera. And it's one of the things that really aggravates me about things like the 1619 Project and how so much of it is just unbelievably just out of sync with the truth and reality, which is one of the reasons that we're doing the YouTube channel. And the YouTube channel is not an extension of this broadcast as much as it's solely focused on, well, the news of the day through the prism of the past and breaking down what's going on in this country. But much of it actually revolves around education and the condition of the education system in this country as we get closer and closer to 2020. And so many of the young people out there that are just completely, unadulteratedly clueless. So we're going to be breaking that down a little bit more today. Also, 1813, the United States defeats the British fleet at the Battle of Lake Erie, this during the War of 1812. And that's really pretty much all that is, well, worth mentioning from a historical perspective. 1932, for example, New York City subway, third competing subway system, is actually owned. And there's a lot of stuff out there floating around like that, but pretty much along the lines of American history that I consider to be significant, not terribly so much. So let's just jump right into what's going on in the deranged world that we live in today, and the derangement continues unabated. There was one Swedish man, for example. He actually applied for a vanity license plate, and the plate just said Trump, and it's been denied. His name is Marcus Safe, and he told local newspapers that he recently purchased a new American SUV and thought it would be fun to apply for the custom registration, but was denied. Swedish transport agency rules explicitly prohibit political messages, along with what they deemed other offensive terms on license plates. Now, interestingly enough, the guy says in retrospect, I guess I understand it can be perceived as such, but he'll go ahead and keep the plate that he currently has. But it just goes to demonstrate that throughout the entire world, there is no lack of opinion on this administration. And, you know, I'm not going to get into this piece that Laura Ingraham put out a day or so ago, but she is correct. And the piece is titled, and I'm paraphrasing, "The Happier Americans Are, the More Happy Democrats Are." And there's a lot of truth to that, because as we get closer and closer to 20, it's becoming more and more and more apparent with trade deals and the economy and the overblown claims of an impending recession, job growth, GDP, you name it, that the economy is just chugging along. And this is one of the reasons why the Jared Nadlers of the world are so remarkably hell-bent on getting this president out of the way. And we're going to get into that here in just a bit. But, you know, it's very interesting when you look at stories like the CIA slamming CNN and then George Soros, who is obviously not an ignorant man, although we definitely disagree with the majority of his political positions, even making the points that the trade agreement with China was the best piece of foreign policy that Trump put out. But these things are not making their way through to the general public. And it's one of the things that irritates me and completely exacerbates the situation when it comes to the dissemination of legitimate, straightforward fact reporting. And then there's this story about these 900 Amazon employees that are striking over the lack of climate change interaction at Amazon proper. I'm not 100% certain what these folks expected the folks at Amazon to actually do about climate change. But we've got a whole segment of our population in this country that is so unbelievably misinformed or uninformed and has no desire whatsoever to do their due diligence. And I fear that if we don't get the attendance, the turnout for the election come November, that we are going to have a very real situation in this country where too many people are going to the polls without a valuable clue to what is going on in the world around them. Now, you know, like I said earlier, when you open up the program, I very frequently get asked or have an opportunity or run across opportunities to speak to what exactly is going on in the country from a, you know, constitutional perspective or a governmental perspective or whatever the case may be. Now, one of these things that popped up to kind of give you an idea of why I'm as concerned as I am was a query that was put out by a magazine, I don't even know who it was, that was asking why the United States has a constitution. And I found it to be a rather odd question. And although I did a little bit of research on the organization, it seems to be a website that frankly probably caters to younger people, as many websites actually do. But it just goes to show a complete lack of understanding or insight into what the United States is all about, which is one of the reasons I think that the reporting on Nathan Hale in 1776 agreeing to spy for the Continental Army is very significant. But let me read, and it's very short. I'm going to read to you exactly why we have a constitution in this country, and maybe, just maybe, some of this stuff will break its way through. Because I am sick, and I do mean sick and tired of people, and you see a lot of this on CNN, you see a lot of it on MSNBC, using the phrase constitutional or unconstitutional as though every single thing that pops up in American culture is governed by the Constitution, and nothing could be further from the truth, including the spread of slavery throughout the country. But let me give you a real quick little insight, and hopefully some of the younger people out there will pick up on this and understand exactly what the Constitution's purpose was, or in this day, still is. The United States Constitution was written to set forth the basic infrastructure for a new centralized government and to establish very clear boundaries for that government. During the Constitutional Convention, the framers of the Constitution were very aware that the individual states would likely be suspicious of having an overarching central government that would oversee the entire nation. The states always felt individual sovereignty was their right. The Federalists, however, believed that as the nation grew and added more states, that a new central entity was required to keep the peace, secure the country, and regulate commerce. Knowing the states might balk, the framers crafted the Constitution to not only establish the new government structure, but to define its role. Any rights not specifically granted to the new federal government were the domain of the states. This was done to encourage the states to join the new nation by ratifying the Constitution. Many did so, believing they could leave at any time, and this helped precipitate the U.S. Civil War. to further ease the concerns of the states, as well as provide a change to the Constitution, the framers added the amendment process. It is purposely cumbersome to prevent any rash and momentary changes to the document and requires substantial support from the states. The framers also drafted a series of newspaper articles called the Federalist, not the Federalist Papers, as some claim, to, quote, sell the states on ratification. The Founding Fathers firmly believed, as the new nation grew in population, as well as geographical size, that her best interest would be served by having a central form of government. This would prevent the nation from being nothing more than an aggregate of independent communities. The founders believed that the new nation could not thrive if there was not mutually beneficial protections on commerce and security, a common currency and banking system, and if left independent, the states would also be vulnerable to repatriation by King George III in England. So that's basically it, basically in a nutshell. And so as I go through the news of the day and I look at some of the things that are being reported in the news, where people are saying things like, you know, unconstitutional, or the president needs to be impeached because he's done something which is unconstitutional, these people don't have a clue in hell what they're talking about. I've also gotten a lot of traffic lately from people that wanted to interview me, or even that I've interviewed, over the 1619 Project. And the reason I bring this up at this point is because, again, there is a narrative afoot in this nation to paint America into something that not only is it not, but that it never was. And this is one of the most just aggravating things that I can possibly report on this program. And this, I think, is the genesis, if truth be told, of much of the Trump derangement syndrome that we see in this country today, where we have people that are simply woefully misguided on what is going on in the world around them. And the Democrats have picked, amongst other things, trade with China. And the philosophical leader of the party, this generation saw Alinsky, being George Soros, has even parted ways, as many have philosophically, with the Democrats. He offered praise for Trump in an op-ed which was published yesterday over his, speaking of Trump's, tough stance on China, but went on to urge Congress not to allow the president to use one of the second largest smartphone makers in the world as a bargaining chip in his fight for re-election. Soros, however, famously shorted the British pound in 1992 and made about $1 billion profit, penned this op-ed, and a lot of people don't realize that at the end of the day, George Soros is in fact a criminal. But in the Wall Street Journal, he penned the op-ed where he said perhaps Trump's only foreign policy win during his presidency was, quote, the development of a coherent and genuinely bipartisan policy towards China and his administration's move to declare Beijing a strategic rival. When I was on the terrestrial signal and I was on the air with you 5 days a week, 3 hours a day, I took some opportunities to break down economic policy and to explain the value of the dollar versus the Chinese dollar, known as the yuan, and why having a strong stance on China was so unbelievably important. Many people do not realize that one of the reasons, and again, it goes back to the fact that we don't teach this, but one of the reasons that America has the full faith and credit and is able to do the things financially that we're able to is the fact that we are the predominant reserve currency in the world. Now, this means we provide the dollars that other nations trade with amongst themselves. And of course, that's a profit situation for us. But in our battles with Beijing, the Chinese are seeking to have the yuan as another dominant reserve currency. This is unbelievably threatening to the economic stability of this nation. Now, let's get a little bit in the weeds here, if you don't mind. Many of the Democrats, and Bernie Sanders being one, Lizzie Warren being another, have completely screamed about the China policy. They are unhinged about what Trump has done. Now, in part because, again, even the sources of the world agree, here's the real irony to all this. The United States is in a very profitable position with most of the world's the countries, about 65% currently trade with United States dollars. Now, some trade with the Russian dollars, others again with the Chinese yuan. If we somehow lost reserve currency status, and don't think it can't happen because it used to be the pound sterling that George Soros shorted. If we were to lose the current reserve currency status or even have 20-25% of it eroded away by the Chinese with their economic policies, we would lose a great deal of the economic, well, stability, one, but the capitalization for the funding of these liberal policies that the Sanders and the Warrens, et cetera, of the world seem to cherish so much. Don't get me started on climate change, because that really does play into this as well, because the United States of America can pass all the climate resolutions that it wants, but if the Chinese do not comply, then we have accomplished absolutely nothing while, economically speaking, obliterated our financial stability and ranking in the world. So you've got these Democrats that are running on these very anti-Trump platforms, speaking of China specifically, without realizing that if the yuan becomes a reserve currency powerhouse, that damages us economically to the point where two things occur. Number one, we don't have the capitalization for the whacked out programs and policies that they want, which, as an aside, might be a good thing, right? But then again, they'll just bleed us all dry in the middle. But more importantly than that, we're giving the Chinese less of an incentive, if you will, to clean themselves up from a climate change perspective, because they run the risk, or the risk that's actually pointed towards us, of dominating the world's international economic community. Hello, Bueller? I know that most people don't see that, and most younger people simply don't grasp it or even understand that, you know, a weak U.S. dollar sounds absolutely awful, but we're constantly nurturing the dollar against the yuan and other currencies to a lesser degree. And a strong dollar basically means that U.S. dollars expatriate themselves from the country and they buy more abroad, whereas a weaker dollar means foreign investment comes into the United States because these other currencies are able to purchase more American assets and or treasury bonds, T-bills, et cetera. But, you know, I'm not going to say this is basic economics or economics 101, because it's not. And it is something which is a little bit difficult to understand. However, I'm quite amused that you had all these Democrat presidential candidates out there screaming about the trade differences with the Chinese and being just absolutely in opposition to what Trump is trying to accomplish, without realizing that if Trump is not successful, their very own policy ideas are in jeopardy. Hello? I mean, what gives about that? Well, first off, what gives about it is they know that you don't know, and I'm not talking about you guys specifically, I'm talking about the general American public, or that people don't care, or that it is beyond the scope of understanding if they, the candidates, understand it themselves. And I seriously doubt that they do. Soros has even gone so far as to praise the Trump administration, his move, Trump's, to put the cell phone manufacturer on the Commerce Department's so-called entity list, which prevents U.S. companies from dealing with this telecom giant in China. Soros also wrote about the tense competition in the 5G market and said the U.S. has a commanding lead over China. But then he went on to warn that Trump might soon undermine his own China policy if he sees the advantage to Beijing. Now, we can get into all the the tentacles of whether or not the telecom company is implanting chips in these phones to spy on Americans or impact the upcoming 2020 election. But these are the kind of stories that most people just kind of blow past and they don't pay any attention to whatsoever without realizing that two things here. If we don't have a revision in China policy, we're going to suffer economically, but more importantly, we're also going to suffer from a security perspective, a diplomatic perspective, and it calls the entire economy into question in terms of its veracity and its strength. And then you have Democrats running around screaming, what Trump's doing is bad, bad, bad. But yet if Trump's not successful, again, as I stated a moment ago, their very foreign policy initiatives, as well as their domestic agenda, is under supported. It's under threat. It is less achievable in that scenario than it is under today's economic situation. Why these Democrats either don't want to share this or don't want you to know? Because at the end of the day, they know something. They know that if Trump is successful, there's not a chance in hell they get elected. And guess what? There's not a chance in hell to get elected anyway. Now, there might be some dark horse that comes on the scene, but in terms of this current slate, ain't a chance in hell, at least from what I can see, provided that we have the economic turnout, or I'm sorry, the election turnout come November 2020, because that's the only real threat. People are walking away from the Democrat Party en masse. And that also, and I've said this before, and I don't mind saying it again, that's also a threat to the country. For the reason I understand, and let me kind of flesh this out, and then we'll go to the phones. We can't afford to allow the Democrat Party to implode upon itself. The Democrats are what keep the Republicans honest. And I don't mean that in a Trump sense. I mean that in a party philosophical sense. And so the Democrats have got to pull their heads out of their wacky asses and understand that, number one, you need to work with this White House, and you win by coming up with better policies, better programs, better bills, and better laws, and not dismantling the ones that even your most ardent supporters suggest are working well, not too bad in theory. But that's where we are in this country today. But they're not going to sell you on that issue. Nobody's going to come out and agree with George Soros. Nobody's going to explain to you the threat of a strong yuan. Not a chance in hell they're going to do that. Because, folks, you know, it is not in the geographical or geopolitical interest of any country to lay down a full-fledged or full-scale military intervention. The next war, and if you want to call it World War III, I'll permit you the license, the next war will be one of economics. That is what we're girding up for in this country. Soros knows it. The Democrats might, but you definitely need to. Let's get out to the phones, and we will start with Clark. Hello, Clark. How are you?
Hey, Michael. You doing all right? Good weekend?
It was a hot weekend. I had to do some I went to a football game. It was too hot for football, but that's a conversation for another day.
It's pretty warm. Oh, well. That'll change someday, probably. So, on Jared Nadler, you know, how many Democrats have we come out and had say that, you know, impeachment is just a bad idea and it's going to hurt the country and hurt the party? Several prominent Democrats at this point. And
yeah, including the speaker.
Yeah, you got the speaker. I think I saw an article on what Tulsi Gabbard had to say the other day. On how bad she thought it would be. Now, apparently, poor Jared is being primaried by an attractive female that has raised $250,000 so far. I don't know if she's got Justice Democrat support or not. It kind of fits their pattern. Now, you know, he feels like he has to go on with this impeachment business to keep his base to where he doesn't get primaried. And you just kind of got to wonder, you know, the attitude here is I am perfectly willing to damage my country and my park so I don't get put in the Crowley Club of people that used to be Democrat representatives but got primaried. I don't know. Just, I think it says something about where some of these people are, doesn't it, Michael?
Well, you know, I've made the comment many times at 4 o'clock, and I think it's hard for a lot of Americans to understand, and understandably so, that it's hard to believe that we have politicians in this country that put America behind their own political best interest, or their own political interest anyway. And you're right. I mean, you know, you're speaking of Joe Crowley and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, and the fact that there was no reason or rationale to believe that AOC stood a chance against the man. But, you know, I think that Nadler, he's on a tightrope here where he is getting dangerously close to being what looks like possibly censored by his own party leadership if Nancy calls him out on this. I don't know that it'll matter in New York, you know, in the land of AOC and Joe Crowley. But, you know, you're right in your observations about getting primaried in this situation. But, you know, I think more people need to be aware of exactly what's going on. And the fact of the matter is there are people in this country that do not look at America as though it's their responsibility, and too many of them are in elected office. You can point to Nadler, you can point to Omar, you can point to Rashida Tlaib, you can point to Presley. The list goes on and on and on. And it's hard. It's a hard pill to swallow, but in fact it is a pill that needs to be swallowed. Because there are people that are in positions of power that don't care about anything but maintaining that power.
Well, you know, some of the names you just mentioned, I think the difference between them and Jared is, you know, Jared very much loves Jared Nadler, and Omar, Tlaib, Presley, they just very much hate America. Oh, and there's a difference there. Hey, you know, what people have to understand about our U.S. dollar being world currency is a lot of our government's financial, I don't know, is it theory or policy or how you want to state it, Michael, but, you know, if the dollar discontinues to be the world currency, then our Treasury can't just keep printing dollars that have no backing. We get into a hyperinflationary situation where if you're an employer, you have to pay your employees for the 4 hours that they've already worked at noon so they can go buy lunch, because what that money will be worth at the end of the day will not get them lunch anymore.
Oh, it has so many ramifications. It gets us into fractional reserve lending and banking and margins and all kinds of crazy stuff. Because, you know, the American I hate to put it this way, but to a degree, the American economy is predicated on check kiting. And, you know, it's the full faith and credit of the United States. And as you point out, you know, that's one of the misnomers that the AOCs of the world have is, hey, you go to the Treasury Department and you see them over here printing dollars in mass. We can print all the money that we need. What they don't see, what's so funny, Clark, is they don't understand representative government, you know, vis-a-vis the Electoral College. But they don't also understand representative currency, meaning that the dollars themselves are not money. The dollars themselves represent an asset. Same thing with a check. You write a check, that's not money. It represents a pool of money that's over here, supposedly, and we're constantly floating dollars. If we lose our reserve currency, we lose that ability to float. We lose the money that we profit from, you know, the Fed fund rate, which, as you're aware, is the rate that banks charge each other to loan money overnight. Most people don't understand that every single night, all across the world, banks are borrowing money from other banks to support the loans that they just put out. It's so complex that the average American can't get their head around it. We lose reserve currency status to the Chinese. The hell with World War III. We're, for all intent and purposes, in the economic dumpster.
Well, what's the first law of economics, Michael? Supply and demand.
Supply and demand, yeah. Pardon, having coffee.
Supply and demand. Supply increases, what happens to the value of that supply? It decreases, right?
Right, sure.
Mm-hmm. Now, every time we print dollars that are just printed dollars and are not actually backed by value, the value of the dollars that are already in circulation are diminished. I mean, the fact of the matter is, you know, printing extra dollars is a hidden tax because you got money in the bank. You got money in your wallet. You have land. You have any kind of asset. Every time they print dollars that they don't have backing for, what you have is diminished in value. It's just that simple. Inflation is a tax. You know, and people want to talk about inflation. Well, that's because people keep raising prices. No, prices keep going up because the dollars are worth less. It's just that simple. And, you know, we're getting to the age, Michael, where, you know, how in the world did we get to where a truck could cost $60,000? $60,000.
Oh,
you know?
Park, I looked at one last week that was $85,000. I'm like, who the hell do you people think you are?
Right. Now, you know, when you and I got out of high school, you could not put enough bells and whistles on a Chevrolet Silverado or an F-150 Ranger XLT to cost $10,000. And we're in an age now where you look at this truck and how could it possibly – now, look, there has been some stuff put on there that we didn't have back then. There has. But for the main part, it's not that the truck is worth more. It's that our dollars are worth less. And if we quit having the world currency – oh, my gosh, the rate at which our dollars become worth less, it's going to be a daily thing.
Yeah, you know, but let me interject here. The problem with this, Clark, is that in the Democrat mindset, at least from the mindset of the voters, that doesn't matter because I'm not paying those dollars anyway in theory. You know, if Bernie Sanders has his way, it doesn't matter what things cost because they're not going to cost me. They're going to cost you and me, but they're not going to cost me, the millennial, or me, the young person, or me, the socialist.
Well, I guess, you know, we got two schools of thought here. Capitalism is the unequal distribution of wealth versus socialism, which is an equal distribution of poverty. And,
right.
I, you know, unfortunately, we have allowed them to sell the idea that an equal distribution of poverty is a good thing. I don't know how we get out of this situation. Michael,
well,
I got to go get it. I'm going to keep listening. Keep doing what you do, man.
Thanks, Clark. Thanks for the support.
All right.
All right, bye-bye. All right, I had no intentions of getting into this today, but let me go ahead and do this really quick. Because I did this about a month ago, and I want to do it one more time. Matter of fact, I think it's even up on the YouTube channel under one called Stupid America. And Clark is making mention. I've got you to hear my papers rattling. I got into this again about a month ago. I'm going to do this. I'm going to take a break. I'm going to come back and talk about this impeachment thing and wrap this baby up. In 1931 in West Virginia to graduate eighth grade, and I'm not going to do the whole test. I'm just going to do a couple questions here. Talking about how people don't understand. The problem is we don't educate our kids. Bottom line, we don't educate our kids. And teachers may, you know, they might take exception, but see, that a lot of the teachers don't even know what they don't know. 1931, graduation test, eighth grade. A man sold a wagon for $45, which was three-fifths of its cost. What did the wagon cost him? And then we get into some of the things about coal and rods on a farm, et cetera, et cetera. Miss Henry owns a house worth $7,200 assessed at three-fourths of its value. What is the tax at 15 mils on the dollar? Monroe Daly bought a horse for $150, which was 80% of its true value. What was his gain percent if he sold the horse at 20% above the true value? These are just some of the questions that appear on the, well, not just the arithmetic test, but even the civics test that kids in 1931 had to learn before they were actually able to graduate from, again, eighth grade. And it gets into all forms of taxation here. things that are related directly to the state of West Virginia at this particular time. But we don't teach these things any longer. We don't teach these instructions any longer. We simply hope that some of this stuff will actually sink in, distinguish between poverty and pauperism, and discuss the most important aspects and causes of pauperism. State the difference between a direct tax and an indirect tax. I mean, these are things that are being taught to, how old's an eighth grader? 13? 14, maybe? You know, in 1931, we're teaching young people how to calculate the mills, tax mills on a economic transaction. Today, kids can't even ring up a damn burger at McDonald's if it doesn't have a picture of the burger. That's where we are. And that's why the Democrats find it so easy to completely negate the argument when it comes to economic viability in this country. Because most people don't understand. Most people don't care to understand. Most people don't have any idea what they don't understand. And that's one of the reasons why we get asinine, again, desires, claims, or strategies to impeach Donald Trump based on something that is supposedly unconstitutional that's not even in the Constitution. High crimes and misdemeanors. You know, yesterday, I know I'm getting tight on time here. Yesterday, I was doing a broadcast with Amy Fuller over at U2 America, America Trends. Go check it out. U2, T-O-O, U2 America. And go check out Amy Fuller's program. Does a wonderful job. She's become a real good friend, and I really enjoy hanging out with Amy. She asked me point blank yesterday, what was one of the things that frustrates me the most about the Constitution? And I told her that it was the fact that in some cases, the founding fathers didn't quite explain things necessarily well enough for people to understand what they were talking about in today's vernacular. High crimes and misdemeanors, for example, was not defined. A well-regulated militia. People don't realize regulated didn't mean kept in check. It meant well-armed. Regulated meant your accoutrements, your weapons, your ammunition. A well-regulated, a well-armed militia. That's what they meant. But there are parts of the Constitution that are a little bit vague in these areas, high crimes and misdemeanors. But now we have people like Jared Nadler defining high crimes and misdemeanors without even defining high crimes and misdemeanors. But because people don't understand economics, they don't understand taxation, they can't even ring up a basic order without pushing the picture of the French fries or the hot dogs on the screen, and they sure as hell can't make change without a calculator. That's what's wrong with this country today. That's one of the reasons the Democrats are such a threat, not because people like that vote for Democrats, but because the Democrats understand, from their perspective, the value of having a dumbed-down citizenship, and that is the only way for them to succeed. And if that's a true belief, and I believe that it is, then they will continue this strategy and this trajectory of keeping Americans as in the dark as possible for their own political gain. We come back on the other side. This is the reason that we've got more impeachment talk. You're listening to The Michael Hart Show right here on the Heart of America Broadcast Network.
Most people think that impeachment means you're out of office. Did you ever get that feeling, or are you just in the bubble here? They think that you get impeached, you're gone. And that is completely not true. And I may have thought that myself 50 years ago. But you get impeached, and it's an indictment. It's an indictment. So when you're impeaching somebody, you want to make sure you have the strongest possible indictment. Because it's not the means to the end that people think.
Don't you hate it when your computer is running slow? Did you know that could be a sign of viruses, spyware, or Trojan horses giving hackers access to your private data? Do not let your identity be stolen. Do not let your private documents be made public. Do not let a hacker hold your family photos hostage. Do let the industry-leading security experts at Liberty One Tech ensure that your computer and network are safe. Liberty One Tech will also help secure your online accounts to keep hackers out and make sure you never lose access. It's all free when you join the Talk Text Plus service. With Talk Text Plus, you have unlimited VIP access to expert technology help 7 days a week so that you can always make the right click. Sign up today and get the free security checkup at libertyonetech.com. That's Liberty, the number one, tech.com.
Heart of America and the Michael Hart Show is brought to you in part by the Unknown America Project. Unknown America, myths and little known oddities about the greatest nation on earth, explores many of the falsehoods and fallacies and revisions in American history that impact the beliefs and the thoughts of many people in this country today. So if you'd like to learn some of the most enduring myths that have been perpetrated on the American public for the last 100 plus years in this country, go check out the book at heartofamerica.net. That's heartofamerica.net. And pick up a copy of Unknown America. It comes out to you absolutely no shipping. It'll be autographed, and we'll even send you a copy of the United States Constitution is our way of saying thanks. So support the Unknown America Project by simply going to theunknownamerica.com, and thank you for your support. The Land Report, the magazine for the American landowner, is a proud supporter of the Michael Hart Show. Currently, they're offering an exclusive subscription price for listeners of the Michael Hart Show. So click on the subscribe button on landreport.com and enter the code HARTSHOW at checkout and receive a 1-year discount on America's number one land magazine. You'll get a full year of the Land Report, which normally goes for $59, for only $15. That's a 75% savings off the cover price. Again, that's promo code HARTSHOW at checkout of thelandreport.com, and make sure to check out the Land Report on Facebook if you love land.
Hello boy, BK boy. This thing is credit, but it's debit. Hit that shorty once and I forget it. Big boss, you better recognize. Might go Rick Ross with the curly fries. Sipping Hennessy or dirty Sprite. Doing 180 down the Tom Pike. She on herself.
Hey, welcome back. All right, let's get this thing wrapped up, because I want to get into the Probe This edition of the program, which is what we're going to discuss today. But, you know, before we go any further with this, and I think she's a complete whack job, but she makes an interesting observation, and that would be Marianne Williamson, the 2020 presidential hopeful and author. And she was recently interviewed where she said she discovered the political system to be even more corrupt than she had ever imagined, going on to say, I was known in a world where people loved you and brought things from you. Now I'm in a world where a lot of people hate you. I would say that I feel that I've learned the system is even more corrupt than I knew, and people are even more wonderful than I had hoped. She also said there's a tendency in politics today to stifle opposing opinions, which weakens democracy and limits genuine debate. Again, I point out that we are now a democracy, but I'm not even going to waste my time with that any longer. But the fact that Williamson points to the fact that politics in this country is so corrupt is pretty much spot on. And it's, you know, oftentimes happens when people get elected to office. You know, we sometimes wonder how we can put these great people into office in the House, the Senate, whatever, and then, you know, a year or two later, they come back and they're entirely different, or their campaign promises aren't met, or they change positions, whatever. And that's because they get in this quagmire, this cesspool of just BS inside the Beltway. And then you have politicians that continue to play and or game the system. One of them would be Jared Nadler, who, again, rearing his head. And I played the piece by Nancy Pelosi a moment ago about the impeachment process and how a lot of people think that it's a means to an end. And it simply is not, and it's not going to happen. It can't happen because the Republicans control the damn Senate. I do not know how many times I just got to beat that horse. Hopefully somebody will pay attention to it at some point in time. But now, House Democrats are accelerating their Trump-focused investigations as they've returned from summer recess, as Trump rejects the latest round of ethics complaints and his allies warn that the ever-multiplying probes could derail the Democrats' legislative agenda. In the latest development, House Judiciary Committee Chair Jared Nadler announced a vote for later this week that will essentially formalize the early stages of impeachment proceedings following weeks of confusion. Now, listen to that sentence. He announced that there's going to be a vote for later on that will essentially formalize the early stages of proceedings. What does that mean? We're going to have a committee to explore the possibility of putting together a committee for the purposes of possibly making a determination whether or not a committee was needed in the first place to fully vet out the need for the possibility of a committee and its ability to, well, raise committees in the first place and whether or not the committee should stand. Hereby, this committee is adjourned. What? Folks, are we so stupid that we just go, uh-huh, just nodding our heads along like a little freaking Bobby doll? That's right, you dumb, Jared. Uh-huh. According to Nadler, the unprecedented corruption, cover-up, and crimes by the president are under investigation by the committee as we determine whether to recommend articles of impeachment or other Article I remedies. The adoption of these additional procedures is the next step in the process that will help ensure our impeachment hearings are informative to Congress and the public, while providing the president with the ability to respond to evidence presented against him. Right there, that's the punchline. Constant gridlock for this administration. The unprecedented corruption, yet to be defined. The unprecedented cover-up, yet to be found. The unprecedented crimes yet to be determined. How many probes, how many committees, how many investigations, how many counsels have to come out and say, there's nothing here? Hello? I mean, the third grader can see through this. He went on to add, we will not allow Trump's continued obstruction to stop us from delivering the truth to the American people. Yet he doesn't define obstruction. If the House Judiciary Committee had a fraction of what they claim, proof of corruption, cover-up crimes, we don't have to have a committee to explore whether or not we need to create a committee to determine whether to recommend articles of impeachment against the president. They've been telling us for 2 years they already had enough. Where is it? Why is it? Where is it? They took down Bill Clinton because he lied about a Hummer. Pardon me. Supposedly, the president's lied about everything. So why not just stop talking about it and just do it? Because they know they don't have the support of the Democrat hierarchy. They know they can't get a conviction and removal. You know, Clinton was impeached. Andrew Johnson was impeached. Nixon resigns out of fear of being impeached. Johnson survived by one vote. Clinton fared a little bit better. Even the Democrats in the Senate would not vote, at least a good portion of them, to impeach a president while we are in this situation with the Chinese and the Russians and the Middle East. It would be insanity. And I don't mean political insanity. It would be such a threat to the security of this nation. And again, impeachment just means indictment. It does not mean anything even remotely close to removal. Impeachments begin in the House. Removal is a vote in the Senate. I cannot tell you how many times I've had the argument about Bill Clinton and whether or not he was impeached, but yet he was. And that was over a fib, a lie, an incorrect testimony over a liaison with, of course, Monica Lewinsky. Supposedly, according to Nadler, they've got a lot more on this one. Corruption, cover-up, and crimes. I mean, there's a country and western song in that. It's the same thing we've heard from Maxine Waters, which, by the way, we haven't heard from a whole lot lately, or Al Green. We still hear it from AOC. We still hear it from Omar and Tlaib, but they don't count because they don't have an IQ amongst themselves. But we've been hearing impeachment, impeachment, impeachment for 2 years now, and it's the same general statement every single time. It almost reeks of, Baby, I'm so sorry. She meant nothing to me. I'll never do it again. I promise. And then it gets done again. It's the same empty promise over and over and over again. The new procedures, according to Nadler, would empower Nadler to hold full or subcommittee hearings as part of the impeachment investigation. Nadler also announced that the committee will hold a hearing for former Trump campaign manager. This would be Corey Lewandowski, whom they subpoenaed last month on and this would be the actual testimony, would be a week from today. The new procedure empowers Nadler to hold full or subcommittee hearings as part of the impeachment investigation. He's already head of the House Judiciary Committee. He's got the power. Republicans also have panned the new efforts. It's yet another bid to go after Trump's. After hearings, of course, with witnesses ranging from Robert Mueller to Michael Cohen, failed to deliver the political death blow. But according to Jim Jordan, quote, that doesn't stop them. They're going to continue to push this ridiculous impeachment narrative. Jordan also suggests that the Democrats should call Justice Department Inspector General Michael Horowitz, who's been looking into the origins of the Russia investigation and potential abuses of the FISA court, while suggesting Democrats are not focused on their legislative agenda. They're focused on impeachment. And according to Jordan, they're missing the important things within their own legislative agenda. We've got an election coming up, 2020, right around the corner. Sell us. Sell me, sell the listeners to this program why we should vote for you as a Democrat, and stop promising people all these outlandish gifts that you cannot possibly give. Back in the days of Monroe, in his early political career and in the early parts of the country, early days of the country, it was not uncommon at the polling places, because they were very raucous. It was not uncommon at the polling places to actually serve alcohol. We saw it actually quite frequently. And I want to say, if memory serves, that actually it was not Monroe, it was Madison. Pardon me, I had a little senior moment there. Madison once lost an election. Because, and by the way, this is included in Unknown America. You can find out more about the book at theunknownamerica.com. Madison once lost an election because he didn't give alcohol to voters. In 1777, he lost a bid for election to the state's House of Delegates. He would later write that the defeat was a result of his refusal to provide free liquor to the voters on election day, which at that time was a common custom then known as swilling the planters with bumbo. Madison, obviously a future president, believed that bribing electors with booze was contrary to Republican principles. He's not referring to the party, as the Republican Party would not come around for another 6 or 7 decades. He meant a republic, because we're not a democracy. We're not a democracy. We have had to stave off the gift-giving in this country for many, 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 many years, centuries even, because that's the way politicians have rolled. So now we're going to have the gift of the elimination of student debt, or free everything, or the gift of impeachment, which ain't going to happen. It is mathematically impossible. You'd never get the votes in the Republicans in the Senate, and too many Democrats also are not in favor of it. Now, the focus on the array of Trump investigations also threatens to overshadow the Democratic agenda, even as Nancy Pelosi has tried to focus on policy items like gun control and prescription drug prices. Pardon me. Last week, the majority leader, Steny Hoyer, sent a memo outlining the agenda for the party this fall, including votes on bills to block offshore drilling, to boost the funding for the National Flood Insurance Program. I just had a Joe Biden, the National Flood Insurance Program, and more. As you heard, Pelosi has been very cool to the idea of impeachment all along, amid concerns that the focus could hurt some members politically. Pelosi has suggested that the public generally does not support impeachment, which is true, and many moderate Democrats have also distanced themselves from the process, saying there's no chance of obtaining the two-thirds vote in the Republican-controlled Senate. A guy by the name of Henry Culler from Texas said this last week, "I've been traveling all of August. This is not an issue people bring up. I think a lot of people would just rather vote him out, vote the president out. But see, the problem with that is the Democrats can't achieve that goal." And we know it. And if you think for one moment that Pence would be weakened, let me tell you something. You want to get the biggest threat. The biggest threat to the future of this administration is apathetic voter turnout come November 2020. You want to inspire people to the polls? You want to get GOP support? 75, 80, 85, maybe 90% turnout? Impeach Trump. The support for Pence would be palpable. I guarantee you, in places like Tennessee, Alabama, Mississippi, Kentucky, you would see 90% turnout on election day in support of Mike Pence from the GOP, easily. So keep it up, Democrats. Keep it up. This is one of the most amazing things, and I've been preaching this for the 15 years I've been doing this. The Democrats have this unique faculty of constantly lobbying for things which are counterintuitive to their own best interest. Going all the way back to the start of today's broadcast, where we have talked about the agenda, the foreign policy initiatives, the trade agenda of President Trump and the Chinese, that even George Soros has said is workable. And if we are not successful, we run the risk of losing our reserve currency status in the world and the possibility of so underfunding the U.S. economy that the very socialistic policies of the left would not have the capitalization to ever be implemented. And so yet again, as is predictable, as high humidity in Alabama we have a Democrat Party that works diligently every single day to advance programs, policies, bills, and initiatives that are counter to its own best interest as a party and as a mechanism that seeks to maintain power. But then again, what do you expect in America 2019, where we have been so adamantly successful about dumbing down the average American through a matter of systemic claims of systemic racism, the obliteration of civics and history classes, the elimination of even to the point of world geography and literature. It is absolutely amazing. It's sad and it's heartbreaking. But then again, it was the plan all along. That's it for us. You were listening to the Michael Hart Show. Please share this program with somebody today. Consider supporting us by going over to heartofamerica.net. That's H-A-R-T, heartofamerica.net. You can support us on the Patreon link. Every little bit helps as we continue to grow this thing. Please subscribe to the YouTube channel. The response to the 1619 project will be done later today. We will upload it for your enjoyment because so much of that is woefully incorrect. America founded in 1619. You know who wasn't here in 1619? Yeah, Americans. You know who were? The British, the French, and the Spanish. Don't remember them founding a country predicated on slavery. We'll get a little bit deeper into that later today, so please go subscribe to the YouTube channel. You've been listening to The Michael Hart Show right here on the Heart of America Talk Radio Network. We'll be back with you possibly tomorrow. We might hold off till Thursday as we are trying to cobble something together also for the 9/11 observance. Also remember that tomorrow is the anniversary of the 9/11 attacks, and let's see how the politicians respond to this and whether or not there's going to be talk of impeachment on that very, very, very heartbreaking day that needs to be commemorated and remembered for what it was, a full frontal attack on the beliefs of everything that we hold dear in this country. And I certainly hope that we do not see the political apparatus in this country lose sight of that. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll be back with you very, very soon.